And welcome back to episode 14 of Soccer Spotlight on WQSU-FM on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Again, same two hosts as always, Anthony Heller, Ryan Campbell. Another week with no shortage of controversy in soccer over across the pond in Europe.
Wow, it's just been a really just great week of soccer, I would say. Some good Champions League games, some tight ones. And just in the Premier League, I think we know who's going to kick on and win the Premier League now. But we'll talk about that later in the show.
Yeah, so first we're going to start with the Champions League. And I had a few big name matches. I think the highest profile of which is PSG Bayern. And a 1-0 win for Bayern. And I have to say it was deserved.
It was deserved, but when Mbappe came on, he changed the whole game for PSG. Messi played better. Neymar started getting more. And it looked like PSG were actually going to score. PSG had a lot of chances to score, actually. I think it was Nuno Mendes' chance that was offsides when he crossed it to Mbappe. Mbappe had one saved by the goalkeeper. Another good chance. And the whole PSG team just looked very different. As soon as Mbappe came on, I would say Bayern, Sheffield, they did enough to win the game, but at the time their game management at the end was not good enough. And going to second leg with Mbappe, I think anything is still up in the air, because what we saw from Bayern, they're vulnerable and they could be got at but from PSG.
Yeah, I mean, this is definitely an open tie. I think, I'm going to favor PSG maybe to get a result. I don't know if they'll lose the second leg. I do think Bayern, in the end, though, I think they'll go through.
I think Bayern goes through. I think, but I wouldn't be surprised to see if PSG also goes through, because what I saw from them was just me. The midfield, too, when they changed the midfield, when Vitinha came on with Verratti and Mbappe, the game just looked totally different. Like, I was just wondering, why didn't the coach start from the start, because except Mbappe, because I could see why didn't rush Mbappe, but Vitinha should have started from the start.
Yeah, I think you could argue Vitinha should have came from the start. I don't know. I don't know about the decision to go with Zaire Emery.
Yeah, I don't like it.
I don't think he's ready for that. You know, obviously he's tremendously talented, and I think he's one for the future, but right now I don't think he was ready. I think they kind of threw him into the deep end. And he takes the brunt of it because he's the young guy. They're going to target him. Mm-hmm. And I think that was a decision from Gaultier that I just don't think was the right call.
And another thing, too, is that in second leg, one of the top three, or I would say two of the top three for PSG has to defend. I would say the only one that I'll give a pass to is Messi because of his age and what he has done. But all the other guys, Mbappe, Neymar, they had to defend. Because when I saw, I could understand why Mbappe wasn't defending, because he was still injured and didn't want to risk it, really.
I think, you know, when PSG don't have the ball, they're practically playing three players down. That's the way it is. I think if they really want to come together, they want to go on, they want to actually win the Champions League, and that's PSG's end goal. It's it's what they haven't been able to do. It's the one thing they haven't been able to do, is go on and win the Champions League. I think if they want that, I think they have to realize, yeah, those front three, they have to be more active defense on the defensive side. Because, I mean, there's really no excuse for Mbappe in general. I mean, yesterday, coming back from injury.
I see, because Mbappe shouldn't have played. Mbappe even said it too. I shouldn't have played, but he rushed it.
Yeah,
he got lucky he didn't get injured.
A fully fit Mbappe, there's not really an excuse for not being involved defensively. Obviously, Neymar and Messi physically aren't where they were.
I think Neymar should still defend. I'll give a pass to Messi because Messi is Messi.
But still, I mean, he is pretty well established. He does not like to defend, and he has a minimal defensive work rate. I think that's what we started to see towards the end of his time at Barcelona was that he just really didn't seem to want to be involved at all defensively. And I think that's kind of continued into his days at PSG, into his time at PSG. And the Messi before the controversy at Barcelona, before the issues at Barcelona, I think he was still involved defensively, but he was never you know, the likes of Firmino, who's mm-hmm. just a pressing machine. Even, you know, Lewandowski's a better presser. You know, he was never a great presser.
Yeah.
I think if he returns to the ways of being just an average presser, I think it'll be a different story.
Yeah, but when I was just looking at the game, I just saw all three. I was just like, Bayern have a real chance. Bayern has a chance to be two up, and they didn't take it. Because when I look at this, if I'm guilty, I'm telling Mbappe and Neymar, you guys defend, or I'm taking one of you guys off. Like, they had to, because if they play like that for the whole game with those three up front just sitting up there, Bayern will win, and Bayern will get at them.
Yeah, I mean, leaving those three, it's like giving the fullbacks or wingbacks, whichever they're doing, and they started with the back three, just giving them license to get forward. Is now you leave Kimmich and Goretzka in the hole, and now you have all that space in the wing. It just leaves so much space open for PSG to attack, mm-hmm. and for Bayern to attack and get those crosses in. I think that's the way you have to approach a game with PSG now, because then you know that there's not going to be that much pressure on you from the start. You've got a lot of time to build up a move. Mm-hmm. And so I think that could end up costing them if they can't get those front three more involved. I think you have to look, if you're chasing a game, you need to have the ball as much as you can, right? And so maybe it's not those three. Maybe it's not those three that if you're chasing a game, like, you know, mm-hmm. When you have a lead, I think, yeah, those three are the three guys you want. Obviously, they're PSG's best attacking players. Mm-hmm. But I think when you're chasing a game, you're going to want the likes of Ekitike. You're going to want guys that are be more active without the ball than those three. I think Mbappe, when fully fit, should be pressing more. And I think if those three are pressing together, if the front three are pressing together, I think it's a different story.
Mm-hmm. And also, another thing I want to say, that a story that just come out has been Neymar might be going to Chelsea. Todd Boehly breaking football again.
Yeah, well, I heard it broke from a reliable source, I believe. I
think ESPN FC.
Yeah, I mean, that's not as reliable as people think it is, but it's...
I think it was Jules Laurent that broke the story, though.
Yeah, I mean, I think Matt Law, who's tier one for Chelsea, said there's some value to that, and that there was a meeting between Nasser Al-Khelaifi and Boehly over a possible transfer for Neymar. Yeah. Which would be interesting. You know, obviously, it's been years in the making. Neymar rumored to the Premier League. I don't think it's gonna happen yet.
Well, you can't put anything past Todd Boehly now.
That's true. He would. I mean, he'd throw $1 billion. He'd throw $1 billion to the player, I think.
He would. I wouldn't be surprised, because I would say if it was any other time, I would just say, oh, it's not gonna happen. Now I'm looking at it, I give it real thought to say, Todd Boehly might want him. He wanted Ronaldo. He wanted Thomas Tuchel to get Cristiano Ronaldo, and Tuchel said, no, I don't want Ronaldo.
Yeah, and hard to blame Tuchel for that, to be honest.
And if he was pushing for Ronaldo, he would definitely push for Neymar. He just says a glimmerous name like Neymar. Oh, this, that, like, get him into the team.
And that's going to get shirt sales, too. It's going to make him a tremendous... I mean, it's going to be profitable if you make a signing like that, because it's going to sell an mm-hmm. extreme amount of shirts. It would be ridiculous.
I wouldn't be surprised, though. This is the last thing. I wouldn't be surprised if I see Neymar going to Chelsea on a 10-year deal to when he's 40. I wouldn't put it past Todd Boehly.
I would absolutely. You know, I could see that. And there is a reason for that, business-wise, for FFP, mm-hmm. with FFP. Yeah. But I think it's just I think it's going to come back to bite them. At some point,
they did it too out of hand.
Yeah, I think so. Now we'll talk about Chelsea on the pitch. They lost 1-0 to Dortmund in the Champions League, and I think they had that one coming too.
At the end they look better, but I feel like Dortmund deserves a win. I think it was Kareem Adeyemi, right? Scored a wonder goal.
It was Kareem Adeyemi.
That was just amazing. Enzo Fernandez, he blew right past him with just speed alone and was able to get the ball right before Kepa reached and put it in.
Yeah, and Kepa, there's obviously the story, Kepa, Edouard Mendy, which one of them deserves to be playing. I think, you know, I think I'm going to back Kepa, But there's not much there. It's close. And, you know, I think Slonina could come in and try and fight for the one shirt next year.
But I would say Dortmund probably deserved. Dortmund defended well, but Chelsea really didn't create a lot, though. The only real chance I remember was, I think, the Joao Felix chance and the Enzo Fernandez chance outside the box. Those were only two real clear-cut chances that you could say they created.
Yeah, I mean, it was just, I think they were just a little slow. I mean, I think the pace of the Chelsea game right now is just not not fast enough.
I'll say this. I like Graham Potter when he was at Brighton, and I thought he was good. But the one negative thing I had to say about him was that he never scored enough goals. And we're seeing at Chelsea, he plays pretty, but they can't put the ball in the back of the net, really.
Yeah, so some interesting stats for Chelsea this season. Since the new year, 4 goals in 9 games. They've been shut out 5 times, and they just haven't hit the back of the net nearly enough. And, I mean, the form is, and you can tell, because the form is terrible.
Mm-hmm. And with the players they have, too, they need to be scoring. World-class players.
Yeah, so in 6 games since January, no, 7 games since January 1st, in the Premier League alone, they've won once. They've lost 2, and they've drawn all the rest. And they have not scored multiple goals once. They have 2 nil-nils, a 1-0 defeat, a 2-1 defeat, a 1-0 win, and the rest are 1-1 draws. The last time they scored multiple goals in a game was a 2-0 win over Bournemouth on December 27th. And before that, 1-0 defeat, 1-0 defeat, then the game to Brighton. Then the 2 games before the World Cup break, 2 1-0 defeats, and then the game to Brighton. So going back to October 16th, so since October 16th, they've won 2 league games.
Wow.
It's the win over, it's the Bournemouth win, and then the Crystal Palace win that was 1-0.
Wow.
And unconvincing as well. So yeah, I mean, something's got to change if Chelsea want to turn the season around. Because I mean, at this stage of the season, I think, you know, Liverpool are showing that they're moving in a positive direction. Chelsea are not.
If I'm Chelsea, I don't want to be the guy to say this, but I think it's time for Graham Potter to go.
I think it is. You know, there's two ways of thinking about this here. I think either you give him time, you give him the season. I mean, there were times where a lot of Arsenal fans wanted Arteta out, look where they are now. So I think, you know, I think there's room to give him a little bit of leeway. I think room to give him a little bit of time. But I think, you know, if this form continues, and if they don't pull it together, if they don't qualify for Europe, I think at the end of the season he's gotta go.
The one thing I'll say too about Arteta didn't have the budget that Graham Potter had.
That's true.
Because I look at this and I thought Arteta, I can see why a lot of people want him out, but I always said we had to back him a little bit more and see what he could do. They backed him, brought his players in, and look where they are now. Graham Potter, I don't know if it's Todd Boehly bringing these players in or it's Graham Potter, but they brought good quality players in that he has to get a result out of.
I think they may have been board buys. I think with Todd Boehly, he's the type of player, he's the type of guy to make board buys. And, you know, you see it, and you can tell when a player is a board buy because the coach doesn't really use them as expected. You know, obviously, Donny van de Beek is a good example. He was a board buy, and look how that turned out. You know, I think Badiashile, I think that was intended. I think Badiashile was a signing that Potter wanted to make. I think there's not much after that. I think Enzo Fernandez was a board buy. I think Mudryk may have been a board buy. Aubameyang, I think. Well, Aubameyang was Tuchel.
Aubameyang was Tuchel.
And then he, literally days later, he got sacked. I think Felix was probably a board buy.
I think most of the players were board buys, to be honest.
Yeah, I think David Fofana was aboard by. I think Madueke was aboard by. And I think that's where Chelsea, because they're not cohesive. There's no togetherness in that team. They're not together. I don't think they're a unit yet. I think that's the toughest task for Potter right now, is to make this team come together.
But the atmosphere, though, I have to give credit. The atmosphere at Dortmund was amazing.
Oh, absolutely. I finally got the chance to have a full yellow wall in a Champions League game, and they did not disappoint. Yeah, 81,000. It's because the Dortmund South Stand is standing only, and that wasn't allowed for years in the Champions League. And, finally you get a full house, full yellow wall, and they did not disappoint.
They were treated to a great goal and a great game, which they deserve. And to be honest, I'm not surprised yet Stuart hasn't broken that Todd Boehly has brought everything in Dortmund, from the stadium to the fans to the city to the players to the training staff.
Just buy Dortmund too. Yeah. Just trade with there's the 50+1 rule though, so it wouldn't work.
But he was still found a way to get around it, because the way he was looking at Dortmund Stadium. I mean,
clubs have gotten around the 50+1 rule and kind of not effectively all the time. Obviously, Hoffenheim, and of course Leipzig.
The way he was looking at Dortmund Stadium, he was just looking like, "Whoa, this is my next investment." After the game, I'm surprised after the game he just didn't say, "Go to Dortmund Fish and say how much do you guys want."
Yeah, I mean, it was interesting to see. I mean, obviously, it's his first day. I think he's more receptive to the European football culture than a lot of other American owners. I mean, obviously, FSG at Liverpool are not. They're trying to play Moneyball, and simply in soccer, it does not work. And the thing is, FSG, they're looking for minority investors. It's clear, right? The fans want them gone. I think they've overstayed their welcome. I don't understand why they're not actively looking to sell their entire stake in the club.
I get that.
And I think, you know, the biggest part of ownership is knowing when your time's up. You know, clubs changing hands happens all the time. Takeovers happen, right? I think you have to realize at this point, they've overstayed their welcome. I think they've been around too long. I think, you know, the Moneyball approach worked to get them to the top, but it's not going to keep them there. It's a zero-sum game. You're not going to make a profit. You're going to, like, if you're lucky, you're going to make a zero.
Yeah, right.
But the taking money out of the club, that's where Liverpool prepared, because Liverpool prepared terribly after winning the league. Their title defense, their preparation was terrible. It was not nearly adequate. You know, yeah, last season was good, and they didn't reinforce. Mm-hmm. They had a midfield injury crisis during the summer transfer window. They got just a simple loan. They still that same injury crisis in January. They bring in nobody. They bring in Cody Gakpo, who yes, is a good signing, but is not what they need. And Cody Gakpo has only just scored his first Liverpool goal because. He came too. It was a bad time for Gakpo to make the move.
There was no plan for him to get into the team. I look at it, Liverpool just doesn't have a plan for him and don't know how to really use him.
I mean, he almost feels like a stopgap. He almost feels like, yeah, we're going to use him for a few months until the rest of the forwards are fully fit, and then he's just going to become another afterthought. Because if I'm Jurgen Klopp right now, I'm not picking him over Luis Diaz, because Luis Diaz has been the best outfield player for Liverpool this season. He's
over the last year, full calendar year.
Well, yeah, since he signed, I think he's been the best player. Obviously Alisson is on a different level, because Alisson has single-handedly almost bailed Liverpool out of a much worse situation. Because of the abject failure. Klopp has to stay. Like, if I'm making those moves, I think I want to keep Klopp at all costs. I'd rather sell the whole team than get rid of Klopp.
Does Klopp walk, though?
No. Klopp has said numerous times that he's not walking. As long as he's welcome at Liverpool, he's going to stay.
The only problem is that the same thing happened at Dortmund, where we saw a little bit of burnout like a type of season that we saw. It was worse at Dortmund, but we saw him leave. That's the only thing that I could say. Well, Klopp just maybe want to say, I want to take a break, maybe take a year or two to spend time with my kids and come back to football.
I mean, Klopp was sacked at Dortmund.
Yeah, but I would think, I would just think maybe
I don't think FSG, you know,
FSG wouldn't sack him, but
I don't agree with much of that FSG do, but I mean, if they I think they know enough. Like, I don't think they know how much Liverpool fans are, how upset Liverpool fans are with them, but I think they realize enough that we're upset, that Liverpool fans upset enough that sacking Klopp would just lead to complete chaos. I mean, that would be probably the worst ownership move ever. It would be to get rid of Klopp right now.
I would say they don't. I don't think he'll sack. But the only thing is, something like what Zidane does, or like other top coaches, after they've been in a job for a long time, they just say, "I want to spend a year with my family, maybe after a long bad season like this," and they leave. That's the only thing I could think. Maybe Klopp leaves, because that's what is in the back of my mind. Like, soccer is a very long and tough commitment, and rigorous too.
Yeah, and I don't think you need to spend time with family. I don't think Klopp is gonna go. I don't think there's. I mean, he's. I think, you know, if there's one voice I can trust, I think Jurgen Klopp isn't gonna lie in a press conference. He said he's gonna stay as long as he's welcome at Liverpool. He's got a contract till 2026. I don't think he goes. I don't think there's a prayer that he goes. Mm-hmm. I do think maybe that it's time to look at a change in the backroom staff, though. You know, I do think Pep Linders is somewhat responsible. You know, I'm going to level the blame mostly at FSG here, but I do think Linders has been at the forefront of, I mean, tactically, I think it's his, you know, he published the book Intensity, and then minutes later, I mean, almost immediately after that book came out, the intensity from the Liverpool team was just gone. And so I think there does need to be some freshening up in Klopp's backroom staff. I think Klopp should probably do whatever he can to bring back Zeljko Buvac, who is the guy who is the attacking mastermind that saw, I mean, Liverpool broke the record for goals in a Champions League season back in 17-18. I think with Buvac there as assistant manager, I think if they can find a way to get him back, they'd be able to kick on and, you know, still get something out of the season.
I totally agree.
And yeah, like Liverpool showed this weekend, like on Monday. You know, I mean, it felt the two Liverpool goals felt like the Liverpool that'll be remembered.
Mm-hmm.
This Liverpool team, you know, the Liverpool team of 18, 19, and 19, 20, the team that's more dangerous from opposing corners than the team taking the corner.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how it was. You know, Tarkowski hits the post, and 10 seconds later, up the other end, Liverpool go and score. And by the way, what was Jordan Pickford doing?
I don't know. When I saw that, I was just like, this can't really be England's number one.
No, what was he doing? What was he thinking?
I don't know.
Where was he going? He was going to the corner.
The fact that he is England number one over Ramsdale and Pope is just
no. It's beyond me. It's beyond me. I don't understand.
I think that's a sackable offense just for that, in my eyes, for Gareth Southgate. This man is England number one over I think Ramsdale. He probably lets England go to the semifinals. If Ramsdale doesn't go, then Pickford.
And if Pope's in goal, they could. Pope in goal as well. I think
Ramsdale is England's best. I think Pope is second. Pickford.
I think Pope is the best. I do think Pope is the best goalkeeper England have. I think Ramsdale's second. You know, but there's a question we had: is Pickford even good enough to be in the squad? You know, it's hard to find a third English goalkeeper. But, I mean, there's Dean Henderson. Like, he's injured right now.
I'll put Pickford over Dean Henderson.
But, you know, there is still a question we had there. Is if the performances, if that sort of thing continues happening, for Pickford, I think now you got to look. You got to look at Dean Henderson. You want to give a look to Jack Butland, who moving to Palace and then to United. Neither of those were good moves for him. I think he was better off staying at Stoke or going somewhere where he'd be the number one.
I just have to say too, though, that the fact that Pickford is linked with a Tottenham move is just crazy to me.
It's crazy. That's not.
You guys have Hugo Lloris. I play Hugo Lloris over Pickford.
I'd take Lloris over Pickford, yeah.
That is a wrong move, God.
No, I mean, obviously, I think they're going to find a successor. I think Tottenham are going to go for a successor to Lloris at the end of the season.
Yeah.
But Pickford is not the answer.
If Pickford isn't goal, it will be a horror season. He will be out in a year.
No, I think probably the right move for Tottenham in goal is probably Gregor Kobel. I think that would be the best thing they could do.
I could see that.
You know, I don't think they'll be able to get Mannion. I think obviously Mannion, I think, is one of the better keepers. I think he's probably the best goalkeeper outside of the Premier League right now. Aside from Courtois, of course.
Yeah. There's another guy that I would like to see go to Tottenham, where I think that would fit good in Tottenham, but I just don't think he would go. Emi Martinez.
I don't think he would go.
I don't think because his Arsenal ties. Because I think
Emi Martinez. You know, now that I think about it, I could see it. I think Emi Martinez is that type of guy.
He's that type of guy, but I think he has a little bit more loyalty to Arsenal.
He is a controversy merchant. He's a controversy merchant.
I would think Emi Martinez, he could fit Tottenham, maybe going deep in the Champions League, Premier League runs, because he's a top goalkeeper. He's a goalkeeper that gets in people's heads, and it throws people out. We saw at the World Cup. It worked.
Yeah, you know, I could see him going to, like, Bayern. Because obviously they signed Jan Sommer, but I think he's just a short term.
I think Jan Sommer's a short term, but I think when Neuer comes back, they're going to go with Neuer.
Yeah, but also they're going to need a long term. They need a long term successor to Neuer because Neuer's 38.
I don't think Emi Martinez though is going to be a content with sitting on the bench behind Neuer.
Yeah, I think when Neuer eventually does retire, which I think is in the next few years, I don't think Neuer is going to be like Buffon. I don't think he's going to play to 45.
I don't think.
You know, there's only really one position that can go to 45 in soccer, and that's a goalkeeper. I mean, I washed up at 17, so I couldn't tell you. But I don't think Martinez. You know, I could see Martinez making that move, but you know, I think every one of those type of players has a line, and I think that's it. Of you know what they'll do to get an advantage.
Yeah.
You know, him, like, you know, Andy Robertson is that type of guy. You know, obviously, Everton hates Andy Robertson. And you saw that in the derby.
Yeah.
I don't know how Cody didn't get booked in that. Actually, he was already booked, wasn't he?
I think he was.
Yeah, I don't know how he didn't get sent off there. Because Pickford and Robertson laughed in each other's faces, and then Cody came in there. I think that whole situation escalating is all in Connor Cody. I think Pickford and Robertson, you know, they were just, they were laughing in each other's faces. I don't think there's much in that. Yeah. I think Cody's come in and tried to escalate, and I think that's what caused that situation to become what it did.
Yeah. Let's talk about the Tottenham AC Milan game real fast, because that. Who do you think goes through in the second leg?
I think Milan.
Wow. How's it going to go with Tottenham? I see them pulling out. But you think Milan goes through?
I do think Milan goes through.
Milan isn't even in great form, but I thought Tottenham maybe just pulls it out, going back to White Hart Lane.
Yeah, you know, there's a question. I mean, I think it's going to be close. I think it could definitely go to extra time. But, you know, even though this Milan team is in bad form, I think they have enough to get over the line.
I just think Harry Kane somehow gets them through. I see a tight Tottenham win. It's nervy. Maybe 3-1, maybe a 3-1 win or a 2-0 win, but I just see Tottenham somehow pulling through. It's not going to be pretty. It's not going to be great, but they come through somehow, I feel like.
Yeah, so another big talking point from yesterday, Arsenal, Manchester City. And Arsenal have dropped off the top of the league for the first time in a long time. I don't know exactly the day, the last time Arsenal weren't top of the league this season, but it was a while ago.
I think Arsenal's title run, I don't want to say it's officially over, but I think it's. I think we're starting to see them unravel.
Yeah, I mean, obviously they still have a game in hand, and they're only behind Man City in goal differential. But I think the wheels could. I mean, 1 point from the last nine, I think the wheels could start to come off.
The one thing I'll say though is that I thought Arsenal played particularly well. It was just individual mistakes and lack of experience at this level.
Well, I mean, yeah, Arsenal had a chance to go 14 points ahead, and they didn't take it. I think that's where this has come from. Mm-hmm. You know, but 1 point from the last nine available. Mm-hmm. You lose to Everton, and the wheels came off. Obviously, the Brentford game, we'll talk about that later. But yeah, I mean, Tomiyasu had a nightmare.
Tomiyasu, I think if that's Ben White, he puts it into the stands.
I think you're right. I do think you're right.
I don't know why Tomiyasu came in. Why I don't understand the change of why I try to change his back four.
I don't think Tomiyasu's the guy. Going forward, he's the guy that got you there. I think. You have to realize, like, now that Arsenal are going to be a Champions League team, I think you have to realize, right, like, the guys that got you there are not going to be the guys that keep you there.
Mm. Gabriel had a nightmare, too. I don't even know. On a Haaland penalty that got called outside, he got lucky. When I was looking at that, I was just like, what are you doing? Why? You got out-muscled, you were out-positioned, and you pulled him down in the box.
Yeah, and just VAR comes and bails you out.
And even the Zinchenko chance, too. Haaland could have had a double. Zinchenko messed up routes out of the box, and Bernardo Silva could have slipped him in for an easy goal. And he got bailed out. Zinchenko, too. It was just, in the second half, I think, I just saw a lack of experience from Arsenal. Not being in this position before.
What do you think of Bernardo Silva in that game? I mean, he was all over Saka.
What was Pep thinking with that decision, in my opinion? I think Bernardo Silva should have been sent off.
Yeah, I agree.
Saka dusted him the whole game. Why would you put
I mean, he started in left back.
Why would you put him in that position? That's my question.
You had Manuel Akanji on the bench, and you have Ake at center back. You could do the... I'll never understand Pep. It's the Pep roulette. I mean... FPL managers watching, listening, you know, the Pep roulette is, mm-hmm. like, and I'm an FPL guy. I do a lot of that. The Pep roulette, that's why I can never pick City players. The only one I used was Haaland. Because Haaland gets you, Haaland almost never blanks, so mm-mm. you kind of have to have him in your FPL. But yeah, I don't know what Pep was thinking. And luckily it didn't come back to bite him.
I think he got lucky, Pep.
He did. I think he did get lucky that it didn't come back to bite him.
And Nketiah had some good chances that he missed. I think Arsenal weren't clinical in the final third. It was too much touches. It was bad decisions in the final third. I look at the Granit Xhaka chance where he had, I forgot who he had on his outside, or he could have taken a shot, and he gets a ball caught underneath his feet, and it gives Diaz an easy tackle.
Yeah,
there was too much mistakes.
I think Arsenal's mistakes beat themselves because they could have beaten City. I think if they play their best game, I think they're going to beat City here, and I think they're going to beat them convincingly. But they didn't, and now they've got a much tougher title run in to deal with. You know, I think they can still win the title, but now at this point, I don't think they're favorites.
I don't think they're favorites either, but I would say they'll probably get second. But it's just a young team that needs more experience at this level. It happened last year with top four, where lack of experience didn't carry them through, and I see it happening now where lack of experience in a title run.
Yeah, I mean, that's just, it's confusing, honestly. I don't know what's happened to Arsenal in the last few games, but they've dropped 8 of the last 9 points available, and now they're not looking like the same Arsenal team.
And I love Nketiah too, but I think they need Jesus back.
They do, absolutely. You know, obviously he had his moments against United, but he's not a title winning number nine.
He's not what Arsenal need right now. He's a good coming off the bench option, a rotation player, but he is not Jesus. I think if Jesus is there, those two chances that Nketiah had, they're in the back of the net.
I think you're right. I do. I mean, you know, as much as I, you know, think Nketiah is a solid player with a lot of potential, I don't think that he is a title winning number nine yet. I think the potential's there, but right now I don't think he's a title winning number nine. And so I do think, yeah, you're right. I think Arsenal do need Jesus back if they want. The faster they get him back, the better chance they have of winning the title. And we look at the table. Like, you look at Liverpool and Chelsea, and you say, oh, they're having terrible seasons. Liverpool are not out of the Champions League race yet.
They're not. I think they have to be near perfect, but they're not.
They're only down. They're down. They're 9 points back on Newcastle. They have a game in hand. You know, I mean, if they win. If they beat Newcastle this weekend, they're 6 points out of the Champions League places. And if Tottenham win, obviously it'll be 7 points, but they have two games in hand over Tottenham. And that would close the gap back down to one. I mean, if Liverpool kick on, if they play like they did against Everton, if they find the form that they had last season, I think they will still qualify for the Champions League. I think, you know, that this recent, I mean, the Everton win has made me feel a lot more optimistic about Liverpool. I think that was the Liverpool of old. You know, especially with Diaz coming back, I think there's definitely a chance now that Liverpool kick on and go and get the Champions League.
The one thing I want to say though is that also Arsenal need a response against Aston Villa fast.
Arsenal do need a response.
They need to turn up against Aston Villa, because if they don't turn up against Aston Villa, I think the title's pretty much over.
If they lose to Villa, I think the title's gone.
Because if they turn up against Villa, there's a chance that they could be sitting at Etihad. City could slip up if they go deep in the Champions League, too.
I don't think City are going to go deep in the Champions League, though. I think they're a quarterfinal or last 16 exit. I don't think Leipzig's going to beat them. But, you know, I don't think they would beat Napoli. I don't think they would beat Bayern. I don't think they would beat either Liverpool or Real Madrid.
I think they could beat Liverpool, but
Liverpool have their number this season, I think.
The other thing I want to say about this, too, is that City, I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but City, I feel like, gets easier draws than most teams in the Champions League, though.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the evidence is there, but also they have had some pretty tough draws in the past. So I think, you know, it's just a case of them getting a few lucky draws. Mm-hmm. Another thing that could be theorized about is the referee. I mean, this weekend, Arsenal-Brentford.
How is that not offside? I still don't get that.
Well, it was offside. That's the thing. There's no questioning that was offside.
How did it not get called, though?
The VAR forgot to draw the lines. That's ridiculous.
That is. In the title race, you can't do that.
It's ridiculous. And in the Chelsea game, too, with that handball.
That's 100% a handball.
Oh, it's a handball, and it's a sending off.
He literally dodged like a goalkeeper to save the ball.
I mean, there's no question about it. It's a handball, and it's a sending off. There's no debate.
I don't get. Both of them are big, because that could be a win for Chelsea right there, and Chelsea need it, and that's the top four. And Arsenal, that's the title race. You can't make those decisions. Although, I'll say about Arsenal, they probably deserve to get a draw, but sometimes the result you deserve, you get a better one.
No, it was one of those where, you know, yeah, the result was fair, but the way it happened was not. Mm-hmm. And I think I've said this about some Liverpool games this season. You know, I think the Fulham game at the beginning of the season, because I don't think that penalty Fulham got was a penalty. You know, Liverpool didn't deserve to win that game. They got a draw, and that's the result they deserved. But it's the way it happened, I think Liverpool should have won that game. And same in that United game, I think there should have been a penalty. I think, and the second goal was offside, but, you know, they deserve to lose, but not in that way.
What do you think about the Arsenal penalty from yesterday?
I thought it was a stonewaller.
I thought it was a penalty too.
Yeah, I thought it was a stone. I believe. Correct me if I'm wrong. Was Ederson on a yellow card when that happened?
No. Wait, actually, he was. I totally forgot about that. He should have got sent off.
I think he should have been sent off. I think that's the second yellow.
I totally forgot that he was on a yellow card. He should have. Bernardo Silva should have been sent off. Ederson should have been sent off.
Yeah, no, I think that should have been a second yellow.
And in my opinion,
because, you know, here's,
these are big game changes.
Here's the thing. Like, with goalkeepers, you usually have immunity. If you touch the ball, you're not getting – you'll be fine. If you touch the ball, you'll be fine. He got nowhere near the ball. The challenge came in after the ball had already come away from Nketiah. Mm. It was Nketiah, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it comes away from after he's gotten rid of the ball. And Ederson just clatters into him. That's a yellow card.
100% yellow.
You know, I was a goalkeeper. I've been booked for less. For less intense, similar challenges, and outside the box, granted. But that's a second yellow. That's 100. Like, that's 100% a second yellow.
I think this referee, he messed up in a big game too, because there's two questionable calls in players that should have been sent off that I think most referees do send them off.
Yeah, you know, I think if Ederson, it's one of those with Ederson where if he's not already on a yellow card, I think he gets booked.
I think he deserves to be off.
You know,
that's
what I think. Like, it's soft. Like, I think that the difference that players on yellow cards get treated by referees and players not on yellow cards, it's like players that aren't already on a yellow card will get booked for much less than players that are. Like, it takes a tough, like a borderline, often sometimes, like sometimes a borderline red, straight red, to get a player already on a yellow sent off, given a double yellow. Like, because that Pavard tackle in the PSG Bayern game, that was close to a straight red. I think it's a yellow, mm-hmm. and obviously a second yellow. But I think, you know, if he's not on a yellow card, that may have been a straight red.
I don't think it's true. I think it's a yellow, but still, I see your point. Because I think both Bernardo Silva and Ederson, in my mind, I kind of feel like it's a robbery that they aren't sent off.
No, I think Ederson's was the worse refereeing decision.
But the thing about it, though, is that Bernardo Silva kept taking hacks at Saka and kept fouling him.
That's true. I mean, you know, I think he probably should have. I do think Bernardo Silva should have been sent off, but I think it's more of a. It's worse that Ederson wasn't sent off than Bernardo Silva.
Ederson was called no man's land. He misjudged the ball, everything.
Yeah, I mean, Ederson, I think. You know, as good of an on the ball goalkeeper is, sweeping is not his strength. Like, you know, he gets credit for being a sweeper keeper. He's an offensive sweeper keeper. He's a good on the ball keeper, mm-hmm. but he's coming off his line. He's not good. We've seen time and time again that he struggles coming off his line. Obviously, I'm not sure if you remember 1920 against Wolves, he had that red card.
Yeah.
Just clattered into Diogo Jota. And I mean, that was, I remember that game.
Adama Traore, where he had a crazy performance. I remember that.
I mean, I remember that game because I watched that game. That was the game. Like, I'm a Liverpool fan. I think everyone that regularly listens to the show knows that. Because mm-hmm. I think I mentioned, like, I mean, we mention who we support every episode practically. That was the game. And that was the game I kind of knew that we were going to win the league. So I definitely remember that game well, and yeah, I mean, it's the same story. It's you know, it's not, it's just not his strength coming off his line. Without the ball coming off his line is a struggle. With the ball, he's great. But I think sweeping, you know, having to come off his line and mm-hmm. and make those sort of tackles is not where he excels. So that is all the time we have for this episode. So, of course, on behalf of myself and Ryan Campbell, thank you all for tuning in. We will see you next week on another episode of Soccer Spotlight on WQSU-FM, Apple Podcasts, and on Spotify. Thank you for tuning in. We will see you next week.